It's been 20 years since the untimely passing of Aaliyah in a plane crash when she was just 22. In that time, her influence has been felt everywhere in music and pop culture, from Ciara to Drake to Normani. Her cool, sexy demeanor and futuristic-sounding collaborations with producers like Timbaland and Missy Elliott still feel fresh today. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Aaliyah's essential songs on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. So, don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision, kind of like choosing to listen to your favorite song on repeat. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. Joining us is writer, comedian, and co-host of the Bad Romance podcast, Jordain Searles. Welcome back, Jordain.
So happy to be back.
Yes, it's so great to have you here. And also with us is writer Kiana Fitzgerald. Great to have you back as well, Kiana.
Thank you so much.
I'm really excited. I think this is a very joyous occasion for us fans because, as I've already mentioned, we're finally going to be able to stream pretty much all of Aaliyah's catalog, her final two studio albums, One in a Million and Aaliyah, as well as compilation albums and more, are getting a proper digital release. Until now, most of her music had not been available on streaming platforms because of tensions between her record label, Black Ground Records, which was co-founded by her uncle, Barry Hankerston, and her estate, which includes her mother. According to a detailed report in Billboard about the deal, the estate does not have any control over her music rights and is unhappy with the way it went down. So, Aaliyah first rose to prominence in 1994 when she was 15, and here is where I must do my obligatory mention of the R. Kelly factor in all of this. Her debut album, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, was produced by Kelly, and she was introduced to the world as his protege. That same year, the two were briefly married, and he was 27 years old at the time. A few months later, a report in Vibe magazine revealed that Aaliyah's age had been falsified on the wedding certificate to say that she was 18 years old. The marriage was quickly annulled, and the two severed ties personally and professionally when Aaliyah moved to a new label and began working with Timbaland and Missy Elliott on her follow-up album, One in a Million. Now, we're not going to talk about any of the songs from Age Ain't Nothing But a Number in depth for obvious reasons, but I think it's important to at least acknowledge because the album's sensual, laid-back vibes and suggestive lyrics, paired with Aaliyah's signature look of baggy urban attire and dark sunglasses, really helped establish her public persona as a young woman who looked and acted much older than she was.
Well, even when she was 14, she never put herself out as a young 14-year-old type ingenue. She always came across as somebody who was very much in control. There was no dreamy or fluffiness about Aaliyah. She was very much in control at all times, it seemed.
That's music critic Steve Jones on Weekend All Things Considered in 2001, the day after Aaliyah died in a plane crash. She was only 22 when she died, and by then her style and look had evolved, and she seemed on the cusp of major superstardom. So here we're going to single out a few of the later hits that really helped establish the legacy she holds today. And Kiana, how about I start with you? What was your pick? And also, like, what is your relationship to Aaliyah?
Yes, absolutely. So my pick is One in a Million, which is the title track from her 1996 album. It's so cliche, but she represents everything to me. She was someone that I grew up really admiring, me and my sister, Jordae. We're both very, very in touch with Aaliyah's style, with her, you know, her vocal charisma, her physical charisma. She was just someone that brought so much to the table when it came to R&B, when it came to pop culture, when it came to Black culture. She was just so cool, and it was effortless, and we wanted to be just like her. So I picked this song because this is kind of like her breaking out moment. After the album that you just mentioned that she did with R. Kelly, you know, One in a Million was really her moment to just be a star in her own right and not have to worry about the things that came with that because of that relationship. So, you know, she worked on this song and this album with Missy Elliott and Timbaland, who are today very revered producers, writers, musicians, and it was just a beautiful moment that seemed to be kismet.
And that's true indeed, and I'm digging you, you make me
Yeah, I also kind of grew up with her. And I think, I feel like the first time I became aware of her was actually on All That. She performed a couple of times on the great 90s kids show, All That. And, you know, she performed one of the songs off of that album, We Will No Longer Name. But she also performed One in a Million. And I think that that was sort of so cool that she had that sort of, I wouldn't say aloofness, but she had this like effortless coolness to her that I think a lot of young girls and young women really wanted to emulate. And when you think about the lyrics of that song, like we heard in that clip earlier from Weekend All Things Considered, she did always seem like she was in control, even if that wasn't necessarily what might have been happening in her personal life and behind the scenes. Like that was the image that she was kind of putting forth. And I don't know. I struggle back and forth with it, but I think it's just such a great song.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually just was checking my phone and I was like, why? Like, I forgot that I have the album on my phone because I was able to pick it up in New Orleans. I was there for a trip and we went to this record store and I was just like digging through the CDs and I found like Missy Elliott's Super Duper Fly. Like I found Aaliyah's One in a Million and I immediately sent it to my sister. I like shipped it home and I was like, just keep this. And so like I was able to kind of, you know, upload it to my phone, but I forgot that like not everybody has access to it, you know, like that's something that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. I mean, even her albums, like a CD was very hard to find.
Yeah.
You'd find it online, but it would be marked up like astronomically. Mm-hmm. And so physical copies of this were really hard to find. Jordan, how do you feel about One in a Million? Because I know this was kind of one of the songs I think you had on your list as well when we were kind of figuring out what we wanted to talk about.
Well, I mean, I love all of her music. And I mean, I got into it when I was young. So it's really hard to, you know, really tell like what exactly brought me to it. But I loved the video and I loved how calming and sensual it was. And it was a song that I always listened to when I was a kid to calm down.
Yeah,
I can totally see that. It has like the hard hitting drums, but it also has just her voice is so soothing.
Yeah. And I want to say also, you know, my sister and I, we're both in our 30s now. We were like, you know, preteen teenagers when we first became aware of her. And our mom also loved her. You know, she was in her 30s, in her early 40s at the time. So for her to also gravitate toward Aaliyah says a lot about, you know, her characteristics and her magnetism.
Yeah, she definitely had a cross-generational appeal. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting is just this song sounds so like now still. And, you know, obviously right now is Normani's Wild Side, which I think has been reported that it's not actually the sample from One in a Million, but it really sounds close to it. Mm-hmm. And Timbaland even kind of like gave Normani a shout out.
Yeah.
So like the way in which she's kind of pulling from like the imagery, the smoothness, the choreography is so like clearly pulled from Aaliyah in that era. Missy Elliott actually did an interview for Billboard at one point, and she talked about working on that song and the way in which there were radio stations that didn't actually, they were like hesitant to play it because they're like, this song, the tempo's weird. We can't meld it into other songs easily. Mm-hmm. And most people at this time in 1996, 97, were belting, you know, it was Whitney, it was Mariah, it was in Vogue. And she was just like laying back on the beat. And I think that's, I love it. I think it really predated so much of the sort of cooing and softer sounds we hear nowadays.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Jordan, your pick is another, I mean, they're all great songs. But I think we have a bit more of an up-tempo song that sort of shows a different side of Aaliyah. So what is your pick?
Are You That Somebody?
Yes.
Boy, I've been watching you like the hawk in the sky. If I were you, on my prey. Boy, I promise you, if we keep bumping heads, I know that one of these days.
Which was on the Dr. Dolittle soundtrack, which is like every single time I think about it, it's so weird.
It's so weird.
Yes.
It's really weird, but I love the song. And I actually had, I had the Dr. Dolittle soundtrack cassette tape. I would I would play the cassette and I would just like go straight to that song every single time. I don't know, but so much of it is also just like the aesthetics. I remember all of the dance moves from it. I remember the hawk. The hawk was amazing.
Yes.
the hair over one eye, like everything about it is just like so iconic. But it's also just like a fun song, even though it seems like it's a song. It took a while until I was like older to realize, is this a song about somebody who like has a secret baby?
Wait, a secret baby or a secret lover?
I don't know. Well, there's a baby cooing in it, so it always made me think. It made me think
baby coo.
Well, because like, because she's kept on saying like, "Are you responsible?" And like, "Are you responsible?" Suggests to me like, "Can you be the dad to this child?" Or
what? Wait, you're blowing my mind right now. I knew it was babies cooing, but I just thought they thought it was a cool sound.
Yeah, me
and they
too.
Were just gonna use it.
I don't know. I mean, I could totally be wrong. I just always like us. Like, I just like put the lyrics and the baby together, and I just created this whole narrative in my head. And it doesn't have to be real, but that was my narrative.
I mean, that is an interesting narrative, especially considering that.
I had no idea how young she was until I was much older, because she always just seemed older. And then I kept on looking at her. Like, I would look at a picture of her when she was 15 and look at a picture of me when I was 15. And I was just like, I don't, how, where?
Let's talk about that a little bit, just because, you know, I think one of the, especially after framing Britney Spears, got me really thinking about the way in which we talked about our teen pop stars and the way we viewed our teen pop stars. And when I think about the fact that she was only 2 years older than, Aaliyah was only 2 years older than Britney Spears and Beyonce. And Britney Spears, you know, for her debut, she was just like, you know, she was sexy, but she was also playing with the idea of like sexy virgin, you know.
Schoolgirl outfits,
the, you know, the Sometimes video and the like all white, you know, all of that was very, she was still playing into her younger side. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to see Aaliyah, like, I also thought she was way older than she was for a very long time. And, but then you realize she passed away when she was only 22. It's like the way in which, you know, she was kind of, you know, put forth as a grown woman, even though she was really just a teenager still. Is that something you wrestle with while you're, you know, engaging with her music today?
Yeah. I mean, and that's a problem, because I mean, even like when we think about Beyonce, like when we look at like early Destiny's Child, like Beyonce is like a kid. Like, you can tell that she's a kid. You can kind of tell how young she is most of the time. I never had any trouble thinking like that Beyonce was older than she was. And I almost just feel also was the fact that like Aaliyah was constantly surrounded by people that were significantly older than her, you know, like DMX and Missy Elliott and Timbaland and like
even Genuine in the One in a Million video was way older.
Yeah. So she was constantly around older people, and there was never, you know, she wasn't ever like really collaborating with anyone who was her age.
Yeah. Right. It seems like she wasn't really afforded the opportunity to be a kid. I've grown up, you know, with her music. It's always been very much like, bro, like she is singing about some stuff that I wouldn't even hit until I would get to my late 20s, you know? And it was like, hearing it now, sometimes it is a little jarring, especially, you know, the album that we don't have to talk about. But as she got older and she, you know, I mean, older is such a weird way to say it, because she was only 22 when she passed. But, you know, as she progressed throughout her career, it seems like she kind of tried to home in on the message of like love in its purity as opposed to like just carnal desires, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And I think also this period of One in a Million and Are You That Somebody, she's still got the sort of swoop over her eye. She might crack a smile here and there, but it's very, there does seem to be some sort of like barrier there. And I think as we move into, you know, the final years of her life, she seems to open up a bit more and explore different, even more different sounds with Timbaland. And also we don't have the swoop in front of her eye anymore.
I know, yeah. I was just going to say, I remember for a while people thought that, you know, she had some kind of issue with her eye. Like sometimes she would wear an eye patch, you know? And it was like, right. What's going on with Aaliyah's eye? But you know, it was just like, it was just a swoop.
Yeah, no, I loved the eye patch. Well, cause I'm half blind. So when I was a kid, I did have to wear an eye patch sometimes, like, mm-hmm. cause they were trying to train my eye to work better, which doesn't work. but when Aaliyah was wearing the eye patch, I was like, man, I feel cool. Like wearing an eye patch can be cool.
Yeah. It was like a futuristic eye patch in that video for One in a Million too. It kind of looked like something out of, I don't know, Terminator or Waterworld or something. Like it was just really cool. Well, that brings us to, you know, my pick, which is her first number one single, and it's Try Again. I love this song so much. Mm-hmm. It's another song that just feels so now. And I was listening to it again this morning and I was just like, she could have released this now and it would be a hit. Everyone would be playing it.
Was that on the Romeo Must Die soundtrack?
Yes.
It was on the Romeo Must Die because in the video, there's Jet Li. There's another.
Yeah, much older person.
But it's funny because like Jet Li and Aaliyah have way more chemistry in the video than they did in that movie because I'm sorry. The movie is not the best. It's kind of a Romeo and Juliet sort of situation. There's action involved and there's, you know, violence and drug cartels and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then you sense that they're supposed to sort of be attracted to each other, but they never really get a chance to explore that. Mm-hmm. So it's just a weird movie. But anyway,
yeah.
Jet Li is in the video. The video has some of the best choreography. I just love it. And, you know, I think also what I appreciate about this song is that when it came out, I remember it came out when I was, I think, in middle school, and we had a talent show, and there were no less than two different groups of girls who did a dance to this song. and it was interesting to me because it was like, it was a number one single, but it definitely felt like there was a divide in terms of like, it was still very much, I feel like her audience was still very much Black, and especially like Black young girls. Mm-hmm. And that song sort of broke the mold. And not that like having a mainstream audience is necessarily, you know, a good thing per se. But I do think that Aaliyah in a way like still belongs to Black people in a way that like other artists don't. Mm. And, you know, I think this song is just like, it's a great sort of turning point. A look at what could have been.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, this song is really special to me as well, just because of the message, you know. I mean, I think nowadays it's a little bit more difficult to find songs like this in terms of like just encouraging you and giving you an opportunity to try again, you know, like just saying that if at first you don't succeed, it's so simple, but we don't really hear things like this in current times, I feel. So just anytime I hear this song, anytime I see the video, I'm just like, man, like, I just wish that we had more messages like this now, because it's fine to sing about love and lust and everything like that. But once we kind of get into a repetitive state, you know, it's kind of like, well, how do you differentiate one artist from another? So I think this was Aaliyah's way of being very like versatile in terms of like the things that she was talking about, the things that she was singing about, and the message that she was projecting.
I mean, I think that that's a really great point. Because when I think about what these young women sing about now and what Aaliyah was singing about, I do think that Aaliyah was coming from like a level of like depth and adulthood that I don't quite see in a lot of the new girls. And I think about mm-hmm. this a lot when I listen to Four Page Letter.
Mm-hmm. I'm sending him a four-page
It was like real R&B, like, you know, light a candle in the tub kind of music. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are just a few of the essential Aaliyah songs that we chose. And of course, there are many more for you to check out. And you should definitely go check it out on streaming. And we want to know what your essential Aaliyah songs are. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you both for being here. I'm so glad we got to talk about this.
Yes, thank you for having me again.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all tomorrow.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.